Welcome to the podcast that's a required respite from my burgeoning addiction to Grand Theft Auto 5. This is A View from the Bridge. This is A View from the Bridge, an official podcast of the Belfast Giants for kingdomofthegiants.com. Today is Tuesday, the 17th of September, 2013, and my name is Patrick Smith. Well, a disappointing weekend for the Belfast Giants, whose 2-0 opening record to the Elite League was shattered by a shutout 5-0 defeat at the hands of Matty Soderstrom's Coventry Blaze. But let's not be downhearted. Coming up this weekend, we've got games against Dundee and Brayhead. Dundee leading the league, incredibly. It sounds really disparaging to say incredibly, but for a team like Dundee, with the budget they have and the situation they're in, to be leading the league with a 4-0 record coming into the LC Arena is both fantastic for the league and for their fans. Also in this show, we'll be talking about sportsmanship. We'll be looking at the news from around the league and the usual sort of banter with Davey and the coach. If you want to get in touch with us here on A View from the Bridge, just drop us an email, podcast@kingdomofthegiants.com. You can go to Twitter @AVFTB, or you can go to the website www.kingdomofthegiants.com/podcast. There may have only been one game this weekend, but there's still plenty to talk about. So Davey and the coach have joined us as always. How's it going, gentlemen?
Hello, Patrick.
Hiya, Paddy.
Guys, after a blistering start to the season and two fantastic wins, we had only one game this weekend. It was against the Coventry Blaze, who were 0-2 for the start of the season. And Davey, it didn't go well. A 5-0 shutout at home. Only our 10th shutout in Odyssey history. And unexpected, I think, is the word for that.
I suppose, as you've quoted the stat there, one or 10 shutouts in 13 years. Hopefully we've had our shutout for this year. It wasn't a great performance from start to finish. I just think we lacked a bit of physicality. We kept plugging away right to the end. We kept forcing the game and trying to get that goal, break the duck. But it was one of those nights. I really believe if we'd played for another two or three periods, we still wouldn't have scored. Their goalie played very well. But at the same time, looking back on it, watching the game again, he didn't have to stand on his head for a shutout. You know, he played very, very well. Take nothing away from him. Take nothing away from their performance. But, you know, we didn't really trouble him with any great shots in front of goal.
Coach, you were at the game covering it for your debut on Giants Live TV. Was it really a tale of two goalkeepers? Because you look at the shot count as well. It was heavily weighted one way. And Stephen Murphy maybe didn't have the best game for the Belfast Giants.
Yeah, I think I would prefer to say. I think he was left on a couple of occasions for a couple of the goals. He was left stranded. Though in saying that, you know, Murph at his absolute best, I think whenever he reviews the tape, he'll probably want a couple of those goals back. But, you know, as I said, when I was doing the commentary with Murph, and both of us commented on it, you know, the likes of Adam Henrick, so calm in front of goal, you know, doesn't feel the pressure whatsoever, takes a puck in on goal and makes his move at the right time. He doesn't flap at any stage. We give their, you know, we talked about it before the game, and their top line, the two Henrick brothers and Ginand, you know, it's arguably the top line in the league, and you know, all you have to do is look at the early stats, and albeit it is early doors, but we gave them far too much respect. Davey's right. Again, I really expected us to come out and play really physical. Let's not forget, I think Coventry were two players down, one import and one of the British guys was maybe not playing as well from memory. You know, there are a couple of guys down on Saturday night, and I expected us to kind of come out and be a lot, grind them down quicker than we did. You know, Coventry did start to tire towards the end of the second period. They were definitely, you could see the fatigue setting in definitely in the third period. But we didn't really hit them physically, you know. Murph didn't have his greatest game, but, you know, I'm sure we'll probably go on to talk about it a wee bit more. Personally, I was a bit disappointed in my number one, Jeff Swayze. You know, to me, he's playing small at the minute, and, you know, albeit he's come up with a couple of big goals, you know, against Edinburgh and a couple of goals against, you know, Cardiff, but he just,
he's lacking something at the minute. And I honestly think someone like Jeff Swayze, when I look back at whenever he was here a couple of years ago, he led from the front in the physical department. And that doesn't just mean fighting. He just hit like a train. He was in people's faces. And that kind of got him going as well. Whereas he's not really playing like that at the minute. It's just, he's just playing hockey. And I think someone like Jeff Swayze needs the physical aspect to really bring out the best in him.
Well, we're not a one-man team, though, Coach. You can't just, you know, I guess we can't. Yes, we do need Swayze to step up. But we had plenty of shots on goal. And as Davey said, there was nothing there that was really challenging to Zacharias. He seemed to get a shutout in his sleep. You know, we've got some top quality forwards there. You look at Whitecotton, for example. You look at Colin Shields. Maybe didn't give his best game to start the season. Okay, it is only the start of the season, and we can't just take the puck and throw it in the bin and say move on to the next. But is there any real cause for worry there that those big game players didn't actually show up when the chips were down?
My big concern, taking away the physical aspect. I've been looking at a few of the stats, and you know, I'm not saying a penalty equates to physical play. The fact that with three games in now, Jeff Swayze hasn't had a minor penalty. You know, our top line, Dustin Whitecotton hasn't had a minor penalty. Colin Shields hasn't had a minor penalty. And with being at home and having the last change, I would imagine, I would have to watch the game tape again. I would imagine that Paul Eady, for most of the night, paired our top line against their top line. And for their top line to outscore us 5-0, because their goals all came from Henrik and Janand.
Yeah.
5-0, they've beat our top line and our top defencemen. Isn't good enough. Daryl Lloyd, for me, is still playing that on the edge, slashing, elbowing, charging type of game. Our other boys aren't coming to the party physically when we need them to. And what is, as I already said, they're most alarming that our top line potentially got beat 5-0 on Saturday night.
Also take into account there, I'll throw in the fact that, okay, only three games into the season, the highest penalty minutes has gone to Davey Phillips with 31.
Yeah,
Davey Phillips. So where's the
although saying that, you know, Davey Phillips over 20 of them are going to go be beaten for getting three out third
true.
Man in
that's
in
true.
Cardiff. You know, I think it's, but he has had to, you know, he had a fight on Saturday night and he got involved in the fight in Cardiff. You know, yeah. He's young British lad leading the way, putting him to body. I say that's a something that we'll probably come on to more next week. I was speaking to you about that earlier today, and I think it's something we'll probably look at in the coming weeks about, you know, the physicality side of the game. But, you know, disappointing performance on Saturday night all around.
I thought it was a missed opportunity. You know, I gave Ben Olsen a lot of credit on the webcast because he stayed incredibly disciplined. He didn't impress me in the slightest last year as a player of any sort. He was probably the toughest guy in the league. Fought the most, he was the most active fighter and all the rest, but he gave away so many silly penalties and put Coventry under pressure, and he didn't on Saturday night, but he was allowed not to. And I kind of flip it on its head and think, if that was us, a couple of players late, an import late and what have you, Coventry at full strength, you can bet your bottom dollar Ben Olsen would have been in trying to get Jeff Swayze in the box for 5 minutes, or Adam Keefe, trying to stir it up a wee bit, putting in a few big hits, annoying the opposition, getting under their skins. We just seemed, I said to Murph on Saturday night, I felt that Adam Keefe was reactive with Brian Harvey, or with, what do you call him, is it Brian Harvey?
Kevin Harvey,
Brian Harvey, he's 17.
He's 17, ran himself over.
Baby, if you got to go away.
I think he just threw that there.
he was reactive to that. Whereas I always think the Giants and any sporting team play best. It's very difficult to kind of build momentum after you've started slow. You have to come out of the traps in any sport. It doesn't matter what you're playing, you have to come out of the traps 100%. And I just felt that the Giants kind of came out a bit laboured. There just weren't many hits. There was nobody in each other's faces. You know, and again, I really thought a Coventry-Belfast game, it was going to be toe-to-toe, face-to-face, glove washes, all the rest. And there was just none of that. But we let that kind of happen. I just think at times we've got to be more proactive as opposed to reactive.
Another thing, I suppose, we spoke about last week how inspired we were in the pre-season and the first couple of league games with our special teams. Saturday night we went 0-6 in the power play and 2-4 in the penalty kill. You know, special teams on Saturday night just did not help us out. It's harder when you're watching it on the webcast via Giants Live TV. It's harder to see everything that's going on. Obviously, you were there, Coach. You've touched on about 5 or 6 times now that you were doing the webcast. What was your view on the special teams on Saturday night? And I suppose Murph's?
Not overly impressive again. We seem to be... Murph and I actually chatted again during the first period break, our second period break about it.
I'm gonna get a noise for every time it's mentioned. It's like ding, drunk.
Goodness sake, lads, come on! And just saying that all of a sudden the power play, where it looked so fluid in the two Bolzano games, it looked really fluid against Edinburgh, and all of a sudden it just became very one dimensional again. You know, Sandrock was out there, and it looked like we were trying to find Sandrock the whole time. There wasn't as much movement on the power play. But listen. Things like that can happen. You know, Coventry are obviously a better team than the likes of Edinburgh, shutting players down, putting players under pressure on the power play a bit more. It just wasn't as impressive. And again, you know, I'm his number one fan, but I just thought Suez wasn't the greatest on the power play on Saturday night. White Cotton does the small things that coaches love. You know, he gets a vital intercept and makes smart plays. But I have to say, he hasn't got... I was expecting White Cotton to kind of get my bum off the seat type thing and kind of, you know, watching, geez, what a play, great pass. He appears to be someone that just does the basics well, which every team needs. But for someone who has played such a high standard, I don't think we've seen anywhere near his best as yet.
I felt a lot on Saturday night, especially when we went a few goals down. We went away from our team ethic that's carried us through the first few games.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
The likes of Suez, not being overly critical, was taking too much on himself, was trying to carry the team forward, I suppose, but was, you know, maybe overplaying the puck. Same with Chevrolet, bit the same with Surrett. You know, there were our big game players. You need your line. You need a line of players to take a team forward. It's very hard for one man in a team game to lift the you know, to carry a whole team. And I thought we just got away from the team ethic a wee bit on Saturday night.
But you know what? Sorry, Paddy. Like, Surrett, I was watching him. Surrett put in a shift every single time he was on the ice. But nothing went for him on Saturday night. You know, he was chasing down pucks when people were passing to him. You know, it was just behind him. It was coming off a stick, hitting his skate, bouncing away from him. Just nothing went right for him. But he was given a... You could see the determination in the guy's face the whole time he was on the ice. So you could... I just thought he had... I just think we had a poor game, full stop and end of story. And I did say at the time that, you know, I do think it's one of those games where you just have to go, do you know what, lads? That was crap tonight. We're a million times better in this. Let's make sure we improve for this Friday and Saturday night. We up our physical game and get out and play, get out and win.
Well, let's not be disparaging to the Coventry Blaze guys. I thought for one, Zacharias had an absolute stunner. You do say maybe he didn't stop any real cracking shots, but he did have a fair bit of a challenge, you know, and I thought his glove hand was absolutely fantastic. With regards to what was going on in that game, the turning point for me as well, when we're trying to get back into the match, I can't remember how many goals down we were at this point, but it was a blazing miss by Colin Shields at the back post when, you know, it was practically an empty net. You had Zacharias trying to get post to post. Shields had the puck on his tip and somehow he put it over the bar. And heads seemed to go down, and we couldn't get back into the game after that. Like you say, Coach, an off night. We've had them before. You know, we've went to many places, and you know, I know people always bring it up, and from time to time you look back at our history. But you remember that opening night against London when we got beat like 9-3 at the Odyssey? These games happen. You just have to pick up the puck, throw it in the bin, and move on. Forget about it, and we'll just, you know, next up is Dundee, and we'll concentrate on that.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more with you. I do think it's a game that you But I'm sure Coach Eddie will be saying to them, you know, we got to learn from this. We've got to up our game. No game in this league is going to be easy. It's maybe a good wake-up call early doors, you know, for the guys. You're quite right, and I know it's something that the Coventry faithful who tuned into GiantsLive.tv said, ding, said, you know.
The new Neil Russell fan club, I think they're called.
You know, we gave them plenty of praise, and quite rightly so. I thought they were superb. I really did. I thought they were well drilled. I think they have a lot of offensive talent in their team. They look solid at the back. As I said, Ben Olsen looked like a completely different player to the player I saw last year. But then all that I saw of him last year was every time he was on the ice, he was slashing somebody, he was elbowing somebody, he was looking to pick a fight with somebody. He played a really good game on Saturday night, and they look solid. They look a good team.
Well, we've got plenty to cover today, lads, and we'll need to move on. But just very, very briefly, Coach, you got to chat to Matty Soderstrom after the game. Unfortunately, the interview didn't work out in regards to recording the way we'd hoped it would do. But if you, what were the key points? It sounded like it was an actual really good interview.
Yeah, he agreed to speak to me after the game, and we went down to the locker room, and I said, listen, this will be 3-4 minutes, and it turned into a 17-minute great chat with him. So it did, and I started off by basically asking him about taking over from Tomo, and did he find that an intimidating thing? And, you know, he was very, very upfront and honest, and basically said it's big shoes to fill, no doubt about it, but Tomo has been instrumental in helping put the team together. But at the end of the day, Matty Soderstrom was the guy that put, you know, the final seal of approval on all of the signings. And, you know, he was very adamant that this was his team. And yes, he obviously had assistance from Tomo because of all of his contacts throughout the world of hockey to get players over. But, you know, Matty Soderstrom rubber stamped all of the signings that came through. We chatted about his top line, and he agreed that his top line is as good as any in the league, and the two Henricks and Janand. He said that he was really, really impressed again with Ben Olsen, as I kind of mentioned there. He thought that he played an incredibly disciplined game and has kind of worked on his skating and come back really, really fit and strong, and he likes the look of his team.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, I'm sure we're going to get a chance to talk about the Coventry Blaze many times now, as the season's only just begun. So we'll move on from that 5-0 and hope we do well. We'll talk about the upcoming games later in the show. But what I want to touch on, lads, is just there's been quite a bit of news over the last few days and over the weekend as the events that took place in the Elite League. We'll talk about Dundee in a while when we touch on our game this Friday night. But Dundee have had a blistering start to the season. They beat Nottingham and Sheffield at home. Granted, you know, they've had three home games and only one away in Braithwaite. They haven't left Scotland yet, but they're leading the league. What I want to actually have a chat with you about, I'll start with you, Davey. This game, Nottingham at Fife, was full of all sorts of incident. Not least the Justin DaCosta penalty shot at the end. You know, Nottingham went away winning 4-3 on penalty shots, quite unjustly.
Well, there seems to be a lot. I've only seen the still pictures. I haven't seen the video coverage of it yet. I think it was Cam was refereeing.
Yeah,
has waved it off. Said he didn't have the linesman allegedly has given the goal, but it's still been waved off. Don't know exactly what's happened here, but looks like another one for the Nottingham conspiracy theorists.
I know the guys in the guys this week in the Cats Whiskers talked about that. They were getting, you know, Nottingham are buying the league, this, that, and the other. They're all very defensive about it. But anyway, it was a situation, Coach, that the puck seemed to come in. It came off Craig Kowalski's pads, seemed to bobble over the line, come to rest in the side, but it looked like it was over the line. The stills, the video, both looked like it was over the line. And as the video turns to Rab Cowan, he sort of waves it off, points at it, and then waves it off again, leaving the five players and fans rightfully angered, frustrated, you know, by what had happened. That's 2 years in a row Rab Cowan's been involved with controversial incidents in Fife Nottingham games. It's not good enough at this level, is it?
It's definitely not, and it's something that is. I listened to one of the very early podcasts there last week in the car when I was driving down the road,
And you were talking that you're going back like 5-6 years now, and you were talking about the standard of officiating in that podcast. And, you know, it's still no different to this day. I'm not sidetracking, but you could even look at Hixey on Saturday night at the Odyssey. You know, kind of one of those games you're thinking is going to be a fast-flowing game. Who's referee? That's Hixey, flip sake. You know, everything's it's going to be stop, start. He's going to be calling everything. He's not going to let the game flow. And there's just so many inconsistencies with the refereeing. You know, I think Darnell is the best by quite a considerable margin. I think he understands the game. And, you know, Cowan's obviously, like, from what I read, from what I've seen in both the video and the still picture, it was 100% a goal. And you're quite right, Paddy. You know, he seemed to, like, wave it off, then point as if that's a goal, and then waved it off again. But what I also read, I can't remember whether it was on Twitter or not, that the linesman actually called it a goal as well.
Yeah, David was just saying.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just poor. You're right, it's just not good enough. But then, that's an elite league issue. You know, are these guys, I have no idea, are the referees being trained during the summertime? Are they away 2-3 weeks before the season starts on camps, you know, educating camp, or training camps, whatever you want to call it? You know, these guys all work for a living as well. Let's not forget that this isn't their full-time job. So it must be very difficult for them to actually get off-ice training. And unfortunately, it needs to improve dramatically, because all you have to do is follow a lot of the players and ex-players around the league, and they all talk about the one thing that annoyed them the most was the standard of officiating.
I think
I think
officiating is a topic that we could spend an entire show on. You know, it's one of those recurring issues. But Davey, some of the other things that happened: Brent Hanley got a one-game ban for a punch on Fulton, deemed a sucker punch. Have you seen the footage of that?
Yeah, you know, there's no doubt about it. It's naughty. It's a sucker punch. I don't think it's worth much more than a one-game ban, to be honest. Personal opinion on it, like, you know, he's hit him a dig in the head. Not that much in it.
Fulton seems to be shouting at the referee or shouting at somebody and not actually looking at Henley, who's right by him, as Henley just lifts his gloved hand in his face and knocks him off his feet. The Nottingham Panthers fans who were at the game were saying that, you know, it's the Fife coverage of it was very selective, and it showed the actual incident and didn't show the build up to it. Does that really matter? Do you have to take these things in isolation, or do you have to say, well, he did this because so-and-so did that?
No time for sucker punching in the game at all. You do obviously have to, you know, if he's running around there, then again, Henley's a big enough boy to sort it out man-to-man rather than resorting to playground tactics like that. It's wrong what he's done. He's been punished for it. I think it's the right tariff for the crime.
Coach, just to close up all the other events in that game, some people say that Henley might have been wound up with the fact that, you know, Eric Werner, broken leg, took him out of the game. He said that he came back on, but he was a broken man. And it turns out that that's his leg snapped in Nottingham, and that's a massive loss for the Nottingham Panthers, no doubt about it.
100%. He was one of the guys along my shoot last year who, on the day, I would have loved to have seen in Belfast. A fantastic skater, fantastic hockey player, and that's going to be a huge miss to the Nottingham. There's absolutely no question about that. Just to go back very briefly to Davey's chat about the Henley punch, you know, we sing off the same hymn sheet in that to a large extent. I really believe that type of thing. You know me, guys, I'm all for the physical side of the game. I love seeing hits, I love seeing the gloves been dropped and two combatants going at it toe-to-toe. But I absolutely have no time for that. It's just bully boy tactics. And Henley's twice the size of that guy. That guy might have been running his mouth off and all the rest. Deal with it. Drop the gloves fair and square with him. You know, call him out. That should shut him up. If he's afraid to drop the gloves with you, well, you intimidate him in other ways. That guy was not looking at Henley in any way. That's dangerous. It's properly dangerous to connect with somebody like that. You know, and it wasn't a light glove punch. Like, Henley, fair enough, had the glove on, but he dropped him. So he didn't. I had no time for that in the game whatsoever. So for me, I think it probably would have been a 3-5 game ban for me.
Also on that Saturday, Brayhead went down to Cardiff to the Big Blue Tent with a Greg Blazin goal as a replacement for the injured DaCosta. But Brayhead took the victory. While up in Edinburgh, Sheffield absolutely smashed Edinburgh 10-3. Davey, Edinburgh is still struggling. There's no doubt about it with regards to the short bench.
I thought Cardiff beat Freyhead 5-4, but there you go. Yes, Edinburgh, they're starting to get a few bodies in this week. I was talking to Craig, maybe hear that later, saying there's a bit of light at the end of the tunnel. You know, Hartman thinks that they got a goal on the power play. Just a bit more positive against Nottingham. Obviously, the getting absolutely smashed by the Steelers does nobody in the league any good, really. I'm not for running up scores in away arenas. I don't mind if the Caps are down in Sheffield and Sheffield want to knock 10 past them, but I really think in front of a fragile enough home crowd for Sheffield, they just keep bombing on and scoring goals against, you know, men against boys. It does nothing for our league.
No, definitely not. And coach, Coventry left us up with the 5-0 and went home to take on Fife, where they took the victory there. And just to read out the scores, you had Venus and Cowley, and then the other four scorers were Janand, 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 and Janand. I think another example of how good that Janand Henrich line really is. But it was punctuated by the fact that what do you call him? Harvey? Brian Harvey, as you call him.
Baby, if you got to go.
Stay now. was given four games, has now been given four games for a check to the head. But regardless of that, Coventry are getting up ahead of steam, aren't they?
They're a very good team, Paddy, no question about that. And Janand is, he was just brilliant to watch on Saturday night. You know, I would have maybe liked to have seen the likes of Cody Brokewell just getting closer to him, getting more in his face. But he's such a nippy skater. He's so skillful. You know, Soderstrom said to me after the game, he's brilliant. He's fantastic. He is going to put up big, big points for us this season. He sometimes over-eggs it. He overplays sometimes. He's too nifty-lifty at times. You know, and he'll be caught out on occasions and what have you. But that he's an X-factor player. There's no question about that. And he's going to light up the league. He's going to have massive points towards the end of the season. And, you know, Coventry have got their hands on a real good one there, Paddy.
Well, gentlemen, I'll move on from that. We've got the games coming up this weekend. But yesterday afternoon on the View from the Bridge Twitter, I think there was a bit of a discussion that went on about sportsmanship, about whether, you know, we will... I think it all started as well from how you react to your own team having a bad game. Do you boo? Do you cheer? Do you clap them off? Et cetera. That sort of developed into a chat of how you welcome the away fans, or the away team. And Davey, it prompted you to write a really good blog that's been, article that's been put on the Kingdom of the Giants website. I'll ask you this question. I'll start with you, Davey. Do you see it as a fact that there needs to be an intimidating atmosphere at the Odyssey Arena that we don't have?
There's no doubt in my mind that the Odyssey isn't a hard place to come to play hockey, in that the fans aren't in your face. It could be from the set out of the arena as much as the actual makeup of the crowd. But it's just more down to the Giants. Match night entertainment now. It's marketed as a family night out. It's not that... For the ones of us that go for purely the hockey and the hockey result, it means more to us as a sporting, and perhaps it's because we've came from different sporting backgrounds where we've watched football, we've watched rugby, we've been in the sporting environment all our lives, and we get sport. Whereas, and there's room for everyone, there's 7,000 people go to the arena, you know, it's a family night out. For me, hockey is blood and thunder.
Coach, what do you think? It's like... It's a situation where you want to have that, you want to have that atmosphere, you want to have that intimidation, you want the fans to be on the opposition's back, but it's difficult to get that in such a big arena.
Yeah, you know, I think from an arena perspective, you look at Belfast, you look at Nottingham, you look at Sheffield, big arena teams, it's a lot more difficult to kind of generate an atmosphere while you're playing in those big arenas. Whereas when you go to Coventry, Fife, Dundee, the fans are right on top of the players. You know, they're literally within an arm's distance of the players, and it just becomes that bit more intense. With regards to Belfast, I have seen the Odyssey Arena rocking on many, many occasions, but the only way in which the Odyssey reacts is by what they see on the ice.
See, when Adam Keefe's dropping the gloves, when Daryl Lloyd is hitting everything that moves, that gets, like, we're passionate people. You know, Northern Irish people are known as passionate people. If we see big hits, we see a team playing their heart out for the club, that does get people up and out of their seats and generates a real atmosphere. That's what I was actually a bit disappointed in Saturday night. Big game like that, there was actually a fairly healthy crowd in as well. I know the Giants kind of slightly struggle with numbers until, for some strange reason, until the clocks go back. You know, there was a good crowd in on Saturday, and yet there was just nothing in the game physically. And that does get people up and at them. And I think Davey's article was superb. It was very, very well written. And, you know, I just think in the smaller type ice rinks, it's just a lot easier to generate an atmosphere.
Well, I'll give the credit to the original asker of the question. I'll bring it back to you, Davey, with regards to this. It says, where do you guys stand on clapping the team or not after a rubbish performance? That's from Carsey. He says, because he'd been reading some drivel on Twitter regards to Saturday. And there has been that chat about whether booing is acceptable if you feel that the team hasn't put in a shift.
The answer, Carsey, there, I know Carsey away from the hockey, and he's a football fan, you know. And
just to give you a heads up, Davey, see if you're ever over there with the wee one, don't ever sit in the big man's seat. Me and the wee one sat there one night, and the big man gave me the look of death, told me where to go. He's a good big man. Carson, he loves his hockey. He's a great big man.
You know, I have absolutely no issue with booing the Giants when the Giants deserve booed. The likes of Saturday night, spoke about it earlier on. In my opinion, the vast majority of the Giants kept their shoulder to the wheel the whole night and kept going and kept going and kept going. There was a few players there on Saturday night, took the third period off, coasting in the checks, coasting in and out of the zone. The game was already dead for them. There was other players that, you know, tried to keep the thing going. For me, Saturday night, the vast majority of the team still deserved a round of applause at the end for the effort to put in. I've been at games where the Giants have completely mailed it in. I've been to a game, you were there with me, Patrick, away in Newcastle when we put the backup goaltender in halfway through the game.
Yeah.
Nearly caused me to take a door off the hinges in the arena. When the Giants mail games in and don't put the effort in, I feel quite within my right to let the players know. And as I can't walk down to the locker room and tell them face to face, the only way I have to do it is by booing as loud as I can. And as Marty McAllister would say, boo!
some of the opinions that came through on Twitter, Stevie Robinson came up with the fact that he felt that, you know, basically if we win, he would clap harder, but he would still applaud the away team off. He wouldn't boo anyone in a Giants jersey and let other teams' fans do that. You have varied opinion. Laura on Twitter says, you're booing of any kind makes her uncomfortable. Well, even before the skate off is also disrespectful, win or lose. Coach, would you walk away if you thought the game was over and you weren't happy?
Well, that was going to be my input into this discussion. You know, I have on a couple of occasions, just out of frustration, annoyance, on the very rare occasion, disgust, up and left at the halfway through the third pair. I think it was a game last year. I think it might have been against Coventry as well. I'm not sure. Where we're like, we just played awful. It was towards the back end of the season, still in with a chance of the league, and we got beaten 4-0 or something like that at home. And it was a dreadful. It was just a lackluster performance when we really needed a good performance. I just, me and the wee woman, just up and away we went. You know, I couldn't watch anymore. But that's my way of showing my disgust or my annoyance, and that's just my own personal feeling on it. You know, Davey and I have had plenty of debate standing up at the back in the Odyssey. You know, he's absolutely disgusted with me at the end of a game when I clap the opposition off. I would never clap the opposition on. I would never clap the opposition during a game. But at the end of a sport, and I was always brought up playing rugby, football, cricket, I was always brought up, at the end of a game, you shake the hands with the opposition. And at the end of the day, everyone's paying their money to go and watch a sporting contest. And at the end of a sporting contest, I think you should applaud both teams off the pitch, akin to the likes of rugby, which you see on a regular basis. I think it's a respect thing more than that. Don't get me wrong, if the opposition, Newcastle Vipers from a few years ago, who just gooned it up continually, the crowd's into it. You know, Andre Payet's been a balloon, and Rob Wilson's, you know, leading the charge and getting all his goons out onto the ice to start World War III. Of course you boo them off, because that's part of the theatre, that's part of the excitement, the adrenaline that's pumping. But at the end of a game, 99 times out of 100, I would always clap.
Davey, the word that seems to pop up quite a bit on Twitter, the angry budgie Paul Sullivan rubber pucky, is the fact of respect, that you would applaud the opposition team off, regardless of how they play, out of respect for them. Do you think that's a factor? You said, you know, you're quite adamant in your article about how, you know, you want to give them hell, but would you not see the fact that even if they were to beat the Giants and beat them well and do it in a classy way, that a round of applause for the away team's efforts is worth the respect?
Just not for me. You know, everyone's allowed their own. I have no problem with anyone else's opinion. I have no problem if people want to stand and clap. As coach will tell you, he stood beside me for many years and got a quizzical look from me and Dr. Love whenever he was, you know, clapping away teams that had just came and pulled their pants down in front of us. You know, it's call it disrespectful if you want, but to me, there's only one team in the Elite League, and that's the Giants, and the rest of them can all go and whistle. I have no respect for any of those teams, and that's just my opinion on it.
I find that really strange coming from a sportsman like you, Davey, because there has to be, to play sport, there has to be a level of respect for the opposition that you play against in terms of their own ability, the fact that they have a team put together and they're out there to compete against your team. And of course, if you lose a game, you're going to be pissed off, you're going to be annoyed about it. But, you know, still at the end of a game, you'll go and shake the opposition's hand no matter what at the end of a football game as a mark of respect. Thanks for the game. And I just think, I understand where you're coming from. I'm the same. I couldn't give a damn about any other team in the league. But I think at the end of a sporting contest, you should always, you know, respect the fact that you've watched a good game of sport.
Well, I don't disagree with you, Coach. Like every Saturday night, they've got in. I'm playing over here in England now at the minute, as you know.
I thought you were Wales.
No, that's you. I understand that, you know, they've now brought in the handshake before the match, even at football at my level. So they shake hands with the players before the match and we'll shake hands with them after the match. But, you know, it doesn't mean anything to me. I'm just an odd being. When it comes to hockey, I'm so single-minded in my support of the Giants that the other team means absolutely nothing to me before, during, or after the game.
I'm not going to be a hypocrite here and try to state that I'm with you, but like, it's the fact that, you know, and it works both ways. I'm also happy to boo my own team if I don't think they've put a shift in. But I guess that's just, it's character. It's to do with your own character. Everybody supports their team in different ways. Everybody expresses themselves. It's a sort of a visceral thing with regards to the, you know, what sport is. Sport is basically a sort of sanitized version of war in the ice, tribalism between your team and their team, and you're trying to support your team in the only way that your character sees fit. And for me, that would be, you know, being disparaging to my own team when I don't think they're doing good enough, and being disparaging to the away team just because they're the away team. You know, I'm perfectly comfortable with that. I guess other people aren't comfortable with it because they have their own ideas, and, you know, you have to be constantly encouraging your team and you shouldn't be knocking them in any sort of way. I don't get that personally. I really don't.
You know. And I would agree with that, by the way. You know, I know I'm kind of sitting maybe slightly piggy in the middle here, but, you know, between the both of you, in terms of you guys are slightly more to the left of me, but you know, I would tend to sit in the middle. But like, on the flip side of that, I'm not one of these fans who, you know, I don't agree with, you know, our players have to be applauded on every single occasion just because they're wearing our jersey. If they're wearing our jersey and not putting 100% effort in my opinion, as a fan watching the game and having watched it for so many years, you know, people who have watched the game, you know what players are putting a shift in for you. That's why people like Adam Keefe and Daryl Lloyd will never be criticised by our fan base, because those guys put in a shift every single time they set foot in the ice. But there has to be a level of accountability for players as well. And Davey's right. How as a fan do you make that known? As Davey said, you can't, you know, boys aren't walking down into the locker room after the game saying, 2 minutes of your time, please. Mr. Murphy, Mr. whoever, you know, didn't think that was good enough tonight from you. Yeah, that doesn't happen, and quite rightly so. So a fan has to be able to get his or her point of view across, and sitting up in the stands, the only way to do that is to either shout or boo or to clap.
Well, as you say that, Coach, let me just put this to you. I actually contacted Rob Sandrock earlier this week, yesterday, with regards to the debate that was going on, and I actually really wanted to get a player's view on both issues, on the fact, you know, playing in an intimidating atmosphere and also, you know, the booing aspect. And he sent me back an email, and I'll read it out to you. He said, if fans want to boo, that's up to them. They've paid their own money and are allowed to voice their pleasure or displeasure with the performance. Booing will not make a player feel worse. We're all highly competitive and put way more pressure on ourselves within than any outside force ever could. Whilst it's nice to be cheered, we also accept that booing and negativity come with the job too. If you don't have a thick skin, you usually don't last too long being an athlete. He also said, I think having an intimidating rink helps. I don't think so much as going against the visiting team, but rather giving the home team a boost. If you look at Coventry or Cardiff, with their fans getting all over the opposing players, when your fans get into it, it gives your team a boost. But I think that's great. I think it's great when our fans clap the opposition after a game, whether we win or not. While the fans came to see us hopefully win, without the other team, there wouldn't be a game. So give them a round of applause after the game. Just don't be doing it before or during the game. You can dislike or hate the opposition, but always respect them. Interesting points from Robbie Davey.
Yeah, and to be honest, he's, you know, 9 out of 10 things that I say in the blog, he's kind of agreeing with. He sort of disagrees with the way I think the opposition should be treated after the game. But, you know, the whole sanitisation of the hockey, where the players shake hands after every game, where in a sport where that team might be coming back in 2 weeks, that team, Coventry just beat us 5-0 and got a big round of applause from our fans on Saturday night. And I thought, this is great. We can't wait to come back here. This is a lovely place to play hockey. Back in 3 weeks and they get cheered, you know, they get clapped back on the ice. For me, we should be sending a message to our players that we're not happy, to Coventry that they're not welcome back. And the next time they're going to come back, they're going to get hell from our fans as well. It's just the whole, I don't actually, whenever I'm slightly backtracking what I've said, in so much as perhaps the last visit of each team for that season, they could have a little ripple of applause or whatever. You know, we've got to remind teams that even though you might have beat us this time, you've got to come back here, and the next time it's not going to be as easy.
But that's a player's thing, Davey. You know, I think, honestly, from the stands, as fans, if you're a true hockey fan, you appreciate, I appreciated on Saturday night the skill level of the two Henrik brothers and Ginand. Like, their skill sets were phenomenal. Their finishing was cool, calm, collective. You've got to, as a sports fan, and I'm as big a Belfast Giants fan as anybody, but you have to appreciate the skill there. And, you know, to me, it's the players' job. They're the guys who are paid the money to score the goals, to stop the puck going in the net, to set the momentum, to set the physicality levels in a game of hockey. It's up to them the next time that Coventry come. And, you know, if the Giants come out, as I said 10 minutes ago, if the Giants come out in a game and hit from the first drop of the puck, and play a physical game, get the puck down, zipping it about, getting shots in and goal, good quality shots, you know, making the opposition work, making the opposition goaltender work, the Odyssey crowd gets into it. And that's when the Odyssey crowd will respond to what they see on the ice. So my point is, the next time Coventry come to Belfast, if the Giants set the tone right in the opening 5-10 minutes of the game, the Odyssey crowd will be right into it.
I don't disagree with you at all there, Coach. And I suppose it's maybe from getting to more away games, when you go and you're slightly more backs against the wall, you know, you're outnumbered, where you've got to try and create the atmosphere to support your team. In so much as, you know, you're saying there that the crowd in Belfast can wait for something to happen rather than getting behind the team and helping them to make something happen, you know. From my play devil's advocate here slightly, you know, just to keep the debate going, for me, a supporter, I can't get on the ice, much as I would love to, I can't get a pair of skates on and go out there and do it myself. So my job on a Saturday night is to give everything I've got to support my team, to just empty my tank behind the team to see if I can do anything to help them win.
Innuendo bingo strikes again. Well, guys, I think this is a debate that could run and run, and I think it's, you know, it's very, very interesting in regards to, because everybody has their own opinion on this. Everybody approaches the game in their own way. If anybody listening wants to give us their opinion on it, you can go to Twitter at AVFTB or drop us an email to podcast@kingdomofthegiants.com, because I'm sure this is something that will run and run with regards to, we'll come against it again, especially when maybe some real intense rivalries develop through the season.
I think it's worth adding there, just Paddy, just quick thanks to Rob Sandrock for taking the time just
absolutely
to come up with his opinions.
Absolutely, and hopefully we'll hear from Rob again if there's anything else we crop up with, because he's been very kind in answering our emails and coming on. He's been on the show before, so yes, thanks to Rob. Davey, you had a chance earlier on today to chat with Craig Anderson of Slapshot Scotland. We'll come to the games against Dundee and Brayhead, because we've got two Gardiner Conference opponents this weekend at the Odyssey Arena. But what we'll do is we'll hear what the chat that you and Craig had to have.
Joining us on this week's show is no stranger to the podcast. His mum calls him Craig, his bank manager calls him Mr. Anderson, but he's better known to you and me as Slapshot Scotland. Welcome to the show, Craig.
Thanks very much, David.
Craig, we'll just batter on here. Obviously a busy show tonight. We're going to start at the top, although it's early days. Who would have thought Dundee Stars, the pace setters?
Yeah, I don't know if anybody had any money on that one. Certainly I didn't. I'm not much of a betting man, certainly. I've been known to dabble. But no, Dundee Stars top of the league right now is absolutely fantastic. I had a quick word with Jeff Hutchins after the match on Sunday night against Sheffield Steelers. You could tell just by talking to him, he's absolutely delighted. But he's quick to warn that obviously this is only four games into the season. There's still another 50-odd to go. So he's certainly not going to let the team rest on their laurels. But, I mean, they're a very changed team. Again, talking to Jeff, he's highlighted the fact that they're relying on more than one line this time. Last year, if you recall, Mike Whirl and Sammy Ryan were scoring all their goals. Billy Bagrin was weighing in with a few, certainly. But you look at it this year so far, the spread of goals throughout the team is absolutely fantastic. Whirl's back, he's scoring goals. Brock McPherson's come in from Brayhead Clan, he's scored a few. Nico Sacchetti, Nikita Kashirsky, the assistant coach, has scored a couple as well. And then you go all the way back to the netminder. You know, there was a bit of mourning, I think, for want of a better expression, when Nick Riopel left. He kept them in so many games last year. And they've brought in Dan Bacala, who has proved to be so far a revelation. And Jeff highlighted when he signed that while his stats don't really reflect the keeper and in terms of his ability, I think the fans have certainly seen what the guy can do. He certainly impressed me when they played Brayhead the first night of the season there, a week past on Saturday. Bacala was a big, big player for them that night, and from what I've seen and heard since then, it's been exactly the same in the following matches against Coventry, against the Panthers, and again against the Steelers on Sunday.
I see that he's picked up the Elite League Player of the Week, so all looks good for the Stars for the time being. If we move on quickly then down the road to Kirkcaldy. The Fife Flyers, very good at home, hard team to beat in Kirkcaldy. Don't travel so well.
Yeah, but again, it's early days. You know, but travelling, I think, was a big issue for them last year. I think when you talk about them travelling this season, you know, to put it into context, it's only been four games, but they've won at Edinburgh and they lost heavily to Coventry, if you allow for the fact that their bus broke down on the way, which would take a bit of a toll on the players. Certainly been on the road for that length of time, and it's certainly a lot of hanging about, which wouldn't have helped them either when that happened. But, you know, they're coming into their own. I mean, Danny Stewart and Todd Doughty have said that the team are still gelling. They maybe aren't gelling as quickly as they would have liked, but, you know, they're finding their feet. We all saw what a force Fife were last year. They had terrific players on their team. They brought in Bobby Chamont from Brayhead, who turned out to be the third highest point scorer or something off the top of my head. You had Keister at the back with Derek Keller. They're two big. They were two big players for Fife last year. Still early days whether or not those guys have actually been replaced. I like the look of Fife, certainly, last week when I saw them against Edinburgh. They're certainly the makings of a very good unit there. Whether they can carry that on and repeat what they did last year in terms of the playoffs, I don't know. I hope so. You know, I'd like to see all the Scottish teams in the playoffs. It's just a matter of seeing whether Fife can emulate that. They did so well last year.
Yeah, obviously, I think we spoke previously about a bit of a renaissance in Scottish hockey with the four teams now in the Elite League, the three teams coming in over the last number of years.
Yeah, I think it's been fantastic, not just from the league point of view, but in terms of the catchment areas in which these teams are based. You look at the attendances across the league last year, all four Scottish teams all posted an increase in attendance, which is good. Media coverage is slightly better as well. I'm working tirelessly to get more coverage in the newspapers. I get bits and bobs on every now and again, but they're taking more of it, which is quite good. Certainly, my website, Slapshot Scotland, certainly does as much as it can to boost the profile of the sport in this country. But between that and word of mouth of people that go and everything else, that can only be a good thing. In terms of the league, it's created little rivalries as well. I mean, you know, cross-border rivalries, Fife and Panthers now, you know, on the back of two matches where, you know, the playoff quarter-final last year and the match there on Saturday where something's went wrong against Fife. So they feel as though, you know, there's conspiracy theories flying around that, you know, because Panthers are a big team, they're going to get the big decisions and such like, which I don't believe for a second. But it's created that rivalry. So the next time that these teams play each other, that's still fresh in the memory. There's still a bit of needle between them. I've certainly enjoyed that aspect of it, you know, watching from where I am.
Well, moving on then down to Edinburgh, and the Caps have made their sort of traditional slow start, but there seems to be some new bodies in and maybe some light at the end of the tunnel for them.
Yeah, I hope so. Edinburgh are a team, it's hard not to feel sorry for Edinburgh sometimes. I think they're still coming out of the problems they had from 2 or 3 years ago where they nearly went out of business. And I think one accusation that Scott Neil, the co-owner, has been levelled with is that he's too frugal, he's too careful in terms of spending money. You know, it perhaps explains why he leaves it to the last minute, certainly to bring players in. It's happened again this year. The team has been a lot slower in coming together. They're still waiting on Les Rainey coming in, the Canadian. Apparently there's still visa issues holding him back from coming to the UK. It seems to be the case with Edinburgh that they're very diligent in how they do their business. You know, while some of the bigger teams tend to start from the off, once the playoff final's finished, they're already looking ahead to next season. Edinburgh take their time, they do it slowly, and that maybe explains why on the ice they're still gelling together. There were certainly positives when you look at the match on Sunday against the Panthers. They certainly took the game to them. When you think that they lost so heavily on Saturday against Sheffield Steelers, I wasn't at the game, but from what I was told, Steelers absolutely destroyed them. One person actually pointed out the only positive Capitals could take was the fact they didn't take any penalties that night. Look at that, who you will. But against the Panthers on Sunday, I did the webcast for the guys at Caps TV. I co-commentated on that, and they certainly took the game to Panthers. They scored a couple of goals. They certainly showed no fear. They certainly worked better as a unit as well. So there's certainly shoots of recovery from Edinburgh's point of view. They just need to get that first win, at least get some points on the board and start showing that they can compete.
And then finally on our trip around Scotland, I think it's the M8 takes us between Edinburgh and Glasgow over to Brayhead. I think I've described Brayhead's policy as a bit of a revolving door over the last number of years. I think you said yourself that change needed to happen. Kirsty Longmuir herself has left recently and has left Ryan Finnerty and Kevin Bergham with plenty to do.
It certainly is. It's almost like, I say it's almost like it pretty much is a completely new team on the ice and off it. Kirsty Longmuir leaving certainly came as a big shock. Kirsty's been great with me and very supportive in what I've tried to do from a media point of view. As far as the players are concerned, change needed done. When you look back on last year, Jordan Kristanovic came in. He brought in a lot of the tried and trusted, and they just didn't do it for him. There was rumours of all kinds of off-ice clashes, players falling out. They had a ton of injuries as well, which didn't help. For me, I think the turning point of last season, as early as it came, was the release of Bobby Chamont. I think it caused so much of a split because Bobby was such a popular figure. Stats-wise, at the time, he was doing okay. And then, mysteriously, he was let go for reasons, only that the club really know. It became apparent, I think, in fairness to Jordan, that maybe he'd bitten off a little more than he could chew for a rookie coach. He gave it his all. You can't take anything away from him on that score. And when they brought in Paul Gardner mid-season, you could understand Jordan maybe looking to leave the club, as was rumoured. Next thing, he came back a couple of weeks later. Paul Gardner, I felt Paul deserved another season in charge. I thought he'd done okay with what was there, but he should have been given at least another season to take that on a bit further. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. The club wanted to go down a different route, which is entirely what they're entitled to. So they brought in Ryan Finnerty to give Clann more of a physical edge to them. From what I've seen in the pre-season matches and in the first match against Dundee, they've certainly got that. They've got guys that can impose themselves on their opponents. That was something badly missing from Brayhead Clann last season. Some would argue it's been missing since Bruce Richardson left after that first season. And it's just been announced there today that Kenton Smith, had been on trial for a couple of weeks with the club, is now actually staying for the season and is replacing Julian Corrivo, who's left the club so unexpectedly early in the season due to personal issues.
Yeah, and then I suppose moving on to this weekend, the Giants, the team this podcast is based around, take on a bit of a Scottish doubleheader with Dundee on Friday night, then followed by Brayhead on Saturday in the Challenge Cup. How do you think those games will pan out?
It's going to be a huge test for Dundee. You know, it's all very well winning at home to the Panthers and the Sheffield Steelers. They got that great win down in Coventry, but you're talking about one of the top three in Belfast Giants, always difficult opponents on their own ice. So it's going to be a big test for Dundee. I'm sure if Jeff Hutchins was talking to us now, he would say he would probably argue that this is a bigger test than what he faced on home ice last week against the Panthers and the Steelers. If they can come out with at least a point, I think Jeff would take that. I think he would snap your hand off for that one. It at least keeps the momentum going in terms of what Dundee are looking to do, and it keeps things going. Whether they can win, well, I don't know. It just depends on who wants it more on the night, I suppose. I know Belfast, obviously, are still shell-shocked after losing 5-0 to Coventry at the weekend. They'll be keen to make amends for that already. So I think that's going to be a very interesting game.
And then Saturday night against Brayhead?
Well, Brayhead are in the middle of this prolonged road trip because of home ice being loaned out to Disney on Ice at Brayhead Arena. A great inconvenience for everybody concerned, but that's out with the club's hands. Brayhead have done well in Belfast in the past off the top of my head. I seem to remember they've won once, maybe twice over there. Certainly the one time I came over to Belfast, they got absolutely thrashed, but that was that was quite a night. But again, this is a very different Brayhead team. Ryan Finnerty won't have them showing any fear. They'll go there determined. That win against Cardiff last Saturday is a monkey off their backs. They've got the points now. With the addition of Kenton Smith now going to be a prominent member of the team, who knows? Chris Frank certainly made an impression on his debut last week as well. Again, it's one of those fixtures. It could go either way. I think both teams have had a lot of change over the summer. Again, it might come down to who wants it on the night.
Yeah, and then just a couple of things that we'll be talking about on tonight's show, and as you're our Scottish correspondent, we'll talk about Murray Hansen has recently stepped into the Elite League disciplinary role. It's good to see Murray back in the game again, but there's a couple of controversies this week. Harvey obviously getting the 4 matches today for the check to the head. There's been a lot of debate on how that levies up against Hemi's, you know, glove punch the other night in Fife and Convoy's 1-match ban. How do you think, has Murray left himself open to criticism here?
But no matter who you are in that position, it was Simon Kirkham last year, Murray's taken over this year, as you rightly said. Whoever is going to take that job is in for a tough ride, because fans are always going to see things their own way. If it's a player for their team, they're obviously going to defend their player to a certain respect. So it's always going to be a tough thing to ask someone to do, to sit and review things. Murray, as he was a referee, you know, as he was a previous referee, a former referee, he'll look at it and he'll judge on it as he sees fit. I think, personally speaking, I think he's the best guy for the job. He's been in the league for so long as a player and latterly as a referee. I don't think you'll find anybody better qualified, in my opinion. So I think in terms of who they pick for that role, I doubt you'll find anybody better. But yeah, when it comes down to these incidents, I'm sure he'll judge them the way he sees fit. But it's like anything else. You're never going to agree with everything he does. So that's the way it is, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll be badgering Murray to come on the show later in the season and chat through some of his decisions with us, and hopefully he'll take us up on that offer. And then finally, A man who's going into, I think he's about 86 now, Tony Hahn, going into possibly his last season on the ice with the Manchester Phoenix.
Yeah, 46 years old, it makes me sweat just thinking about that, actually. Jeez, I mean, I'm only 36, and, you know, to still have the desire to want to go out there every night and do your job, although I think he admitted in a recent interview I put on the website that he's trying to scale back a wee bit now. I think even he knows that his time is coming to an end. But you look at his weekend, I think he got 5 assists in his 2 matches in Manchester Phoenix's first 2 matches of the season. It's absolutely fantastic that a guy of his age, his experience, still has that desire. I'm sure he still goes on the ice with the enthusiasm as he did when he was 17, 18, first starting out, and I think that's fantastic. It's great to see a guy like him still going out there and doing the business, especially if he's still notching up points and goals as well.
Yeah. Well, Craig, thanks very much for your time. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. We'll have you back on in maybe a month or two when things have panned out a bit better, and we'll be able to talk about the Gardner Conference and the rest of the league. For the time being, you can follow Craig at his website, www.slapshotscotland.com, and you can get him on Twitter. He's always active there, at Slapshot Scotland. Craig, thanks for your time.
Thanks, David.
And thanks very much to Craig for taking the time. Davey, a top lad. He's been on the show before. He's a top lad.
Yeah, I've told him that he's now our official Scottish correspondent. And, you know, the guy's very passionate about his Scottish hockey. He's done a lot of work in the recent number of years trying to up the profile of not just, you know, his own team, but, you know, every team throughout Scotland. You know, he puts an equal amount of effort into, you know, getting coverage for Scotland, so he's a lot of credit to him, man, and he talks with a lot of knowledge. He calls it waffle, but he does talk with a lot of you know, with a lot of knowledge.
He's about to say a lot of waffle.
Yeah, I was about to back him up there.
But no, it's great to hear a great interview. Well, we'll talk about these. We'll talk about the what's coming up this weekend. We've got, first of all, here's words you never really use, especially a couple of weeks into the season. The league leaders, the Dundee Stars, arrive at the Odyssey Arena to take on the Belfast Giants Friday at 7 o'clock. Coach, Jeff Hutchins' team, top of the league.
Jeff John. Yeah, Dundee have started very, very well. They've recruited well by the sounds of it. And they've brought a few players back from last year as well. But Jeff Hutchins looks to have done a very good job in reading the reports on their opening. Was it four games, 4-0. And the highlights that I saw against the Panthers, they looked incredibly good going forward. And their goaltending looks absolutely superb.
I think John is getting a lot more out of Dan Bacala than he was expecting. I think he's admitted himself, you know, that if you looked at his stats, he wouldn't have been a direct replacement for Iopa, but you know, he's came in, he's ended up taking away the Elite League Player of the Week for the first week of the season. He shut down Nottingham and Sheffield with the money those guys have in forwards. It's you know, it's staggering, but it was the sort of the world show last year, but now he's got Bagrin. McPherson's came over from Brayhead. You know, they've got secondary scoring coming from different lines this season, and they're gonna be a handling match on Saturday night. You know, Jeff's team isn't coming here just to roll over and get their bellies tickled.
Well, I know they're coming on Friday night.
And you'll be commentating live on Giants Live TV.
Guys, you look at the team that they have, and one thing that really stuck out to me, Coach, is the fact that they've only got 3 in Port D. There's no real depth in that defence. So is this something that we could see that lasting very long, especially with that lack of depth?
I think over the course of the season, you know, Paddy, they are going to lose. You know, all it'll take is for the likes of a Dundee to pick up an injury or two, which happens to every team. But the bigger budget teams are able to kind of saturate that a wee bit better than the likes of a Dundee or a Fife. So they are. And, you know, the bubble will burst. I don't see them as major contenders going right down the stretch. I think Brayhead, albeit they've had a slow start, and okay, they picked up a victory over in Cardiff, but you know, I think Brayhead looked the strongest squad in that conference. But listen, full respect to Jeff John. He's done very well and put together a very good squad.
Davey, something to be said about their schedule. They are 4-0, and everybody's ranting and raving about how good they are. But let's be frank, they haven't played a game outside of Scotland, and the only away game they've had was the first game of the season against the Brayhead Clan. So they've had three games at home, so that they haven't had to do any travelling really when they've come to face the big teams.
Yeah, well, Craig said in our interview there just previously that, you know, he's been speaking to Jeff, and he's openly admitted that this weekend is, you know, going to be the litmus test of where his team is at. You know, they've had a very good successful start. The points are in the bag. As you've said, they're short in D. Rullick and Dysak have had exceptional starts, but they are playing big minutes. They're backed up by young Sam McCluskey. You know, he's really in his fourth season now of Elite League Hockey, and he's grown as a player.
Yeah.
You know, but that's really where they're now struggling. You know, Robbie Hill, Lewis McIntosh, they're not going to be getting that much ice time, and that's where they're going to fall down. They've got a lot of young guys, young Scottish guys that can come in there and play a few minutes, but they really are dependent on their two big D-men.
And then, Coach, on Saturday night, the first visit of the Brayhead Clan, a team that Ran Finnerty's taken over this season, and one that maybe we thought would really push on from the expectations that were had of them last season. They had a stumbling start to the season, but they seem to have got back on track a little bit. I'd expect this to be a pretty tough game, to be honest. When you look especially at that back line, when you've got the likes of Chris Frank, Kevin Bergen, and Kenton Smith, who today is confirmed in his trial period. I can't believe Kenton Smith had a trial period. His trial period is over, and he's now a fully-fledged member of the Brayhead Clan.
Yeah, and I did read earlier on, and his name escapes me, the other guy that's due to come in.
Macias?
Yes. Was it Macias? There was somebody else as well. Was it Macias, the AHL guy who played a lot in and had played some NHL stuff for, I think, Minnesota Wild a few years ago as well. You know, Finner looks like he's recruited a pretty good team. They've had a slow start. I'm sure he's disappointed at that, albeit they've picked up a good win in Cardiff last weekend, which will kind of kickstart their season. But yeah, I really believe, bar Edinburgh, I really believe that no game in this league is going to be easy anymore. And that is a good thing for our league. Because, you know, I'll be honest, there'll have been times on a Saturday night when I'll have looked and said, we're home to Dundee tonight. What's it going to be? 4-5, 6-0, 6-1, 6-2. What's it going to, you know, we're going to win. And as a Penn sports fan, you want to go and watch your team, but knowing that it's going to be a sporting contest, and as I say, bar Edinburgh, every night it's going to be a contest.
Just to confirm, it is Ray Macias coming back in. He is the AHL, NHL defence we were talking about. Davey, what are your thoughts on this? Like, we know what Ash Goldie can do. We know what Lee Edsler's to do. Matty Toews there now. You know, I'm quite disappointed he's not still with us, to be frank. But the If Finnerty can get these lines to gel, as maybe he did when he went to Cardiff, but if he can get this team to gel together, they will be the strongest team in the Gardner Conference. They must be.
There's a good roster there to be built around. Certainly, I think they're now on the road for a long time with Disney on Ice being in Brayhead. It's hard to say it'll make or break their season, but they have to take as many points as they can on the road here. It goes without saying. This guy, Ray Macias, that's came in, you know, he comes with real pedigree. He's been around the block. As Coach has said, a few games in the NHL. Lately, you know, for a D-man to be scoring sort of half a point a game in the German second leagues, not to be sniffed at. He's had AHL experience in the last couple of seasons. He's been at the Marlies, the Falcons. You know, he's coming with real pedigree, and you know, you've already ran down the names that they have as D-men: Scott Arson, Chris Frank, what do you call the big guy that Sean McMorrow loved beating up, Bergen.
Kevin Bergen.
you know, Bergen, although he's playing up front, obviously, they've got the makings of a very good squad. And I do honestly think that Brayhead will still be the team to be caught in the Gardner Conference.
So, Coach, the Giants, let's focus on the Giants in these two games. They're looking to bounce back from a 5-0. A game against Dundee is really the marker here, because they have been playing so well, and it is a game where Paul Eady has to turn this team around from a disappointing defeat.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you've got to look at it over the course of the two pre-season games, We played Edinburgh, won easily enough in the end. We had a good victory in Cardiff. You know, I know I'm repeating myself here, but I really think the likes of that, what happened on Saturday night, is a game that you just scrub from the memory. I think the Giants have a good mix of youth and experience in their squad, and there's enough experience. The likes of Robbie Sandrock, Calvin Elfring, your Keefs of this world, White Cotton, these guys have been round the block. They know what it takes as professional athletes to turn it around. And, you know, the Giants had a poor game. So what? Every team has a bad game. It's about how you come back from it. And you're right, Coach Eddie will need to set a stall out early. And, you know, what are we expecting from the guys? What, you know, I want you to be doing this. We need to up our physical play. We need to be sharper and all the rest. But the guys know that. Do you know what I mean? You know, sportsmen are deep down honest with themselves, and they'll know what needs to be done on Saturday night and Friday night.
Davey, anything less than 4 points, disappointment?
Well, obviously, I think Saturday night's just Challenge Cup only, but
yeah, it's true.
We still get points for it. I think we'll have to go out and we'll have to set our marker out early. A good win on Friday night to set us up for Saturday night. I think we can win them both. Just what Coach is going, just saying there, back to the players. You know, Mike Babcock obviously played in the UK a while ago, went on to greater things than Whitley Bay. You know, he's always a great advocate of saying never get too high with the wins and never get too low with the losses. You know, these guys are professionals on our roster. We've got a good coach. They'll have had a good week's practice, and hopefully come Friday night, puck drops, we'll be ready to go.
Well, there'll be tickets available for both games if everybody wants to get down to the Odyssey. I think they're going to be two fantastic games to watch. And if you can't get down to the Odyssey, you can listen to Murph and some other fella talking about them on GiantsLive.tv. It's Friday night at 7 p.m. and Saturday night at 7 p.m. Guys, before I let you go, I did say earlier on that this would be... I'm going to test you here. I did say earlier that Saturday nights was the 10th time that the Belfast Giants had been shut out at the Odyssey Arena. Can you tell me who was the first team to shut the Belfast Giants out at the Odyssey?
If I had to guess?
Yep.
I would be saying Sheffield.
Incorrect. Coach? Lots of, I can hear keyboards.
I'd never get it done in time.
Go on, Coach.
I'm going to go for someone random here. I'm going to go Cardiff Devils.
Incorrect. Oh, the answer was...
Can I have another go?
No, because I heard the keyboard going. The answer was that it was Saturday the 3rd of February 2001, and it was the London Knights who beat us. London Knights who beat us 3-0 in the league. So there you go. Gentlemen, a pleasure as always. And Coach, I'll get to see you this weekend. I'll have to come up and say hello.
Yes, mate, absolutely. I'll get you up into the box, mate.
Oh, I tell you, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Davey,
looking forward to it, mate.
Davey, can you do anything? The offer is it? You must know some big-time people like the coach now.
You know, it's just I'm almost in awe just to be, you know, still alive in the podcast with such a heavyweight, and I use that in the literal term as well as, you know, the media circles, a heavyweight as Neil Russell.
You know, it's the people you hang around with. Thanks, gentlemen.
See you. Cheers, Patrick. Good luck, mate. See you on Friday.
Thanks to the gents, thanks to Craig Anderson of Slapshot Scotland for his time, and thanks to Robbie Sandor again for his email, and thanks to you guys, because it was the chat that was going on Twitter during the week that I put that big sportsmanship thing together. So keep your eye on the Twitter, it's at AVFTB, and we'll keep these debates running and we'll be chatting about them in future podcasts. You can always drop us an email as well, podcast@kingdomofthegiants.com, or the website www.kingdomofthegiants.com/podcast. As I said, this weekend's games, Friday night, 7 p.m, Dundee Stars, the league leaders, are at the Odyssey Arena to take on the Giants. And on Saturday night, Brayhead arrive at the Odyssey, Saturday, 7 p.m. If you can't make it to the game, and I think you should get down there because they're going to be two cracking games, but if you can't make it to the game, GiantsLive.tv is the one-stop shop for your coverage from the Odyssey Arena. Aaron Murphy and Neil, the Coach Russell, will be taking you through the games. They'll be doing a great job, as they have been for the last couple of weeks. And wherever you are this weekend, we hope you enjoy your hockey. We'll see you here next time on A View from the Bridge.